so serious.
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. It's Wednesday, which for me, I don't know. When do people actually listen to this on Wednesdays, do you think?
Yeah, maybe. Why not? It's usually posted by midday Wednesday, yeah. Pacific time anyway.
I don't know. But for me, in my routine, it means we're ready to do another toy department.
Woo!
I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. We thank you for putting this in your routine wherever it goes, you know. We all have those podcasts that we need to save towards the end of the week or whatever. Do you find
sure.
I find myself rationing out podcasts sometimes, like according to
I definitely
schedule.
Do that. You know what's interesting? For me, it like goes season to season. And by that I mean sports season to sports season, because like during basketball season I fall 5-10 episodes behind on things like WTF because I add like 4 basketball podcasts to my podcast listening routine. So for me, it's like which of the podcasts I enjoy are most active affects my listening patterns.
Yeah, I do the same sort of thing too. It's like it's weird. You know, you're like, I don't like you any less, college football podcast, but you know, it's the off season, so I get to send you to the back of the line.
Exactly, because otherwise I'll never catch up on WTF and Song Exploder if I'm constantly listening to vertical podcasts.
Still trying to finish Serial. But we thank you, in all seriousness, for making this a part of your podcast routine. I think that's really cool because there's certainly a lot of stuff battling for your time these days. All right, speaking of battles.
What a transition. He's a professional, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you. I do this for a living. Game of Thrones wrapped up at least I thought, uneven last season, but man, did it finish with a bang, no?
I think that's the best pair of episodes the show's ever produced.
Wow. Strong.
I mean, is it?
It's because certainly a case
ninth
for
episodes,
it.
Right? Almost all of the episode nines have been big deal, exciting episodes, right?
Right.
Most of the finales have been okay, you know? Mm-hmm. Most of them have been, and we talked about this last week, I think. Usually in the finale, it's more denouement than it is continued excitement.
Yeah. I'll be right back as soon as I finish looking up denouement.
But you know, it's just, like the...
I'm just kidding. Sorry.
I know you're kidding, but I thought maybe you did want me to actually not talk in...
No, but
not
it's, yeah,
French
I mean,
words.
They've been a little bit anticlimactic, if you will.
Yeah, or it's not even anticlimactic, because, the reason I said denouement is that's the natural course of storytelling. You have this big incident in episode 9 that changes the world in some way, and then episode 10, which is the finale, is sort of the effects of that change, usually, and kind of setting you up for next season. That has been the pattern of the show.
Right. So you watch it, you're interested, you're really interested, and then you're really, really intensely interested, and then suddenly you lose all interest.
That's what? A harsh way of looking at it.
Is that what you're saying?
I suppose you could look at it that way.
You just want a sandwich.
It's you're feisty this morning. It's the natural course of things.
Sure. But this broke from the natural course of things because this just took the peak and kept on extending it, if you will.
It just kept going up and, by the way, still managed to set you up in any number of delightfully exciting ways for what's yet to come. I mean, all of the pieces – this episode to me, I felt – and I actually felt this while watching it – like I was watching a chess master – load his like final, you know, attack. Like it was just sliding all the different pieces on the board into the almost exactly the position I personally have been wanting them in for 4 or 5 years. all of a sudden, and spoiler alert, by the way, all of a sudden, Arya is starting to murder people, which is so exciting I can barely contain myself.
Well, I mean, she's been murdering people.
Yeah,
now
but
she's just murdering people
she's
you care
to get
about.
Names on her list.
Yeah,
she's
yeah,
starting
exactly.
to do her list, and you know. Jon and Sansa are loaded up in Winterfell with an army behind them ready to go. And Daenerys is on the seas headed for Westeros. And Cersei exacted her vicious revenge. And by the way, I mean, this has been said dozens of times by dozens of TV critics, but that sequence that started the episode that led to Cersei exploding the church was one of the best 15 minutes this show has ever produced. It was spectacular. I couldn't have been more happy, honestly, with this episode.
Yeah, I thought it was really just, yeah, it was artfully executed on a lot of levels. And one of the things that, you know, obviously I've been talking about the last couple of weeks is this sort of sense now sometimes of inevitability that pervades the series. Sometimes you feel like you know what's going to happen. And, like it's a great example, you know, in this episode, I've been talking for a couple of weeks about how, oh, God, King Tommen is going to die. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's just a
but
matter.
You didn't see it coming like
just
that.
Just a matter of when. Yeah, and in fact, in this episode, like, you know, Cersei pulls off the, you know, the terrorist attack, essentially.
Yeah, that's what it is.
And I'm like, oh my God, holy shit, King Tommen may actually live. And then literally 4 minutes later, he's dead.
Yeah. And it was and in a pretty shocking fashion.
Yeah, and I don't mean to laugh because even that was really beautifully. Staged and the way that shot was framed and the way that the camera kind of just hung there.
Yeah. Yeah, because when it does when you, cinematographically when something like that happens, boy, am I highfalutin and pretentious today. Mm-hmm. When something like that happens, you get this sense of foreboding because the camera sticks there and you're like, why am I staring at this?
I have one question about that scene.
What's going to happen? Oh no! And then it's, like you, it's mm-hmm. it, the. Anticipation is very anxious in moments like that.
Did it seem like the smoke wasn't moving from the ruins? That it was kind of creeping me out a little bit.
I didn't consider it till you just mentioned it. I kind of see what you're talking about.
It looked like he was staring at a painting, and it was actually really like bothered me for.
Yeah,
for a
but
moment.
I will say I think with an explosion that big. Observed from that distance, sometimes that it sort of could look like that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You've ever seen a big forest fire burning from a distance, you know?
I have not.
Well, it kind of looks like that, where it's just this frozen cloud of debris.
Yeah.
I don't think it's that unrealistic.
I love that the show, too, stopped and gave us, you know, look, I know, back to my, I like characters and moments and people and stuff, but the scene with Daenerys and Tyrion.
Yeah.
You know, like the acting was so good, and just that look on Tyrion's face, you know, and the show had earned that in so much, and that you understood that Tyrion was a guy who didn't really believe in anything,
but
you
who
know
kind
what I mean?
Of wanted to, right?
But yeah, but had now found something to believe in,
yeah.
and how much that meant to him, and then to see that faith restored, and for him to, you know, return to this position that really he's, you know, He's found a place, you know, in life. Not that he didn't, you know, he's a guy that didn't feel wanted a lot of his life, and he's found this thing that he's sort of good at, and to be recognized for it, and it was all of that in what was really a very brief scene.
Yeah,
just amazing. And that shot of him, you know, that long shot of him, tiny him, sort of bowing to her.
Yeah,
yeah. Wow, some really fantastic moments.
I totally agree, and. The character of Tyrion, and this is an interesting one I think would be an interesting one to talk about with someone who read the books, because I think the character's a little different in the books. But as we've gotten to know him in the show, this may be the character that's the best developed over the course of the whatever six seasons it is now. We know a lot about what he's thinking, about what he wants, about how he sees himself in the world and his value in the world. And this is the first time anyone has really validated. I guess Varys has validated it before, but it's hard to know if that's sincere or just more machinations from Varys. When Daenerys acknowledges him basically as the man he's trying and wanting to be, yeah, man, it's a heartstrings moment. And again, like a lot of things in this episode, it pays off stuff that we've been waiting for or thinking about for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. This is a show that typically employs multiple kind of big bads,
mm-hmm.
right? Have we now set things up so that Cersei is the next season's big bad?
Well, that to me is one of the most fascinating things looking into next season, is because we have – look, we know a war – now that winter is here, we can say war is coming.
Yeah.
Where that war will be fought, who is on what side – these are major questions.
Now, there's roughly
that we
what
we can't really answer.
There's what, 15 episodes left, right? There's two more seasons, but like I think they're going to be kind of. It's almost the Breaking Bad model of sort of truncated two final seasons. I think 7 and 8. I want to say.
I actually think next season is supposed to be another 10 episodes, and then it's going to do the Breaking Bad thing. Was my understanding, totally sure.
Yeah, see, I thought they were going to the shortened ones. Like that, we're coming to the home stretch here.
I don't think they've actually officially said that at all. I think that's been like I think the way that's been is like, well, we're definitely picked up for next season, and then we got to figure out how we're going to finish it, and we're thinking about some shorter seasons. Like, I don't think it's really that well defined at the moment.
It'd be interesting, and you know, of course, there may be a book that comes out in the middle of this, which I guess could or could not have any effect on the narrative of this thing going forward, right?
Well, that's fascinating, right? Because if you're neither of us are – I mean, I read a couple of the books. I don't think they're great. But
Shade imagine, Throne. Damn.
No, you know, it's not Shade Throne. They're good for the same reasons the show is good, which to me makes them a waste of time. Does that make sense?
Gotcha. I have not read Word One, and I do not intend to, so I'm not
I don't find him to be a particularly engaging wordsmith. Like, as an actual writer, I'm not that into George R.R. Martin. I think his stories are great, his general plot lines are great, his willingness to murder any character at a drop of a dime is great, but all that stuff is expressed very well in the television show. There was no need to insult the books. I take it all back. The books are great. The point is, let's imagine that we were a book reader. Do I even want the next book to come out before the show ends?
Yes.
Really? Because all that can do in my eyes is like screw things up.
No, I think you're imagining yourself as a book reader, but thinking of yourself as from a television, but you're still inhabiting a television perspective.
You've already fallen behind. The books have already fallen behind. Things happen in the books that are different than the TV show, then you have to like decide.
But isn't there this whole world of book readers who view the books as the sacred text? And you know what I mean? And
I think most of them are pretty cool with the TV show, though.
Yeah, no, they like the TV show. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying, you know, they're books first. You know what I mean? And they get mad when the show deviates from the books. I don't think they're going to then reverse course and get mad when the books deviate from the show.
They're just going to be like in a quandary when the books deviate from the show.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
What I'm saying is like I would rather get through the show, get that resolution, and then get back into the books, you know, sort of not from the beginning, but from this point and then sort of see as a whole where it diverges rather than get into one more book, which is not going to be the last book, and then you're like lost in like what's going which direction and – I don't know. Who knows? Maybe it's exactly the same as the next book, but just seems like a plot line quandary I wouldn't want to get into.
And I want to just stop imagining myself as a book reader because those people get to me annoying after a while. Don't they? Don't Derek, they? This is the how it happened, you know, and then they –
Derek's anti-fantasy viewpoint strikes again.
It does. All right. So this is not my viewpoint because I loved – these episodes, and I'm happy with where the story's at. But I want to raise a point that Alan Sepinwall had in his review that you do sort of – you can see the idea now that a lot of the principal characters, now that they're sort of set in motion towards each other, right? And we've got the Westerosi army defending the Iron Throne with Cersei at the helm, and then you've got Team Dragons on their way, and then the Starks in the north. right? Now that we've seen these sort of principal sides, you can see the idea that a lot of the plotting of the last bits has sort of been to keep characters out of the way, and just sort of occupied, out of kind of the main danger and thrust, so that then they can then be put into this position. Like, do you feel at all, like, looking back at it, that maybe we've been treading water a little bit with just sort of lodging Danny and Marine, and then wherever the Dothrakis are from. Where are they from?
The Dothrakis from is an interesting question.
Yeah, yeah. let's just call it Dothraki land for right now.
There's Vias Dothrak is the big, but I...
Yeah, wherever she was.
It's like the great, the sea of the desert or whatever they call it.
Yeah. Keeping her there, and Cersei just sort of, and the battle against the High Sparrow. These were just sort of ways to hold a little time for them until we could get to this point where they can now fight in this battle. Like, do you feel like there was maybe some narrative water treading happening in retrospect?
It's funny. The one place I thought there was a little bit of water treading is Arya, and
Arya was another one I didn't mention her yet.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I don't know if he mentioned that, but
he did. Sorry.
Maybe a little, but Arya is the one I would choose again, because I think Daenerys is. There's character building happening there.
I don't know if I agree with that. I think Daenerys is. Plot is a flat circle, if you will.
Be a bit of a flat circle. Well, I don't think it's a flat circle. I think maybe it's a upward spiral, where you're coming back across. I mean, when she walks out of fire for a second time, obviously I can understand why you're saying circle, but I think it's different, and I think it was at that point it had become important to remind us that she is sort of this anointed queen, not just a girl who has seized power.
What do you see as the growth for her? I guess she becomes a little bit more confident.
It's confidence and a bit of calm, a bit of maturity, I think. And it's what they keep saying it is. It's learning how to rule a little bit. You know, I think that was the goal. That was the stated goal of hanging out in Meereen. And I think it's been more or less accomplished, if only by acquiring Tyrion and learning to cool it a little bit. I think that happens. But again, that strikes me as not dissimilar from your complaints, which I feel like are complaints about the very nature of the show and perhaps a statement of divergent taste, rather than anything significant about the show itself, if that makes sense.
I guess, and again, they're not necessarily my complaints.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying they remind me of some of your earlier complaints about magic and sort of fate existing in this world, where it's like, okay, I hear you, but also then maybe just this is not your thing.
Yeah, maybe.
You know?
I don't know.
And maybe this is not Steppenwolf's sort of thing for whatever reason.
Yeah, I don't know.
To complain about.
Well, but I mean, I don't know if I even buy that, because I'm now speaking for Alan Steppenwolf.
Yeah,
but I do feel like we feel like the same about this, in that you can enjoy this show, find fault with it, but still think it's a worthwhile endeavor. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No. It doesn't have to be
universally loved and accepted.
No. That's not what I mean to say. I just mean to say that if you're going to criticize spending time with Daenerys in Meereen, and also the story in King's Landing, and also the Arya story, and also... You know, if you're, just going to say
all of Dorne
storyline is not what I want, like I don't totally know how to respond to it.
All right, let's move on and let's talk a little bit maybe about where the show's going. All right, so I kind of feel like once Cersei assumed the Iron Throne, she probably signed her death warrant before the end of this series, right?
Gotta believe so.
She has nothing left to live for. everybody's coming for that throne.
And it certainly seems like Jaime is not on board. I mean, we're judging based on a couple of looks.
Yeah.
But he didn't look thrilled to see her walking up to the steps of the throne.
You've got two pretty fearsome characters in Arya and Lady Olenna, who were literally hell-bent for revenge on killing her.
Correct.
Who gets Cersei?
I think Arya does.
You think Arya does?
Yeah.
I could see them working together.
I could as well, but I hope Arya does. I hope Arya gets everyone.
Do you?
Yes. I just want Arya sneaking around in faces, slitting throats. Like, I'm so thrilled about that. I've literally been waiting for that since the Lannister jerk-off army guys killed Cyril Pharrell. I've just been waiting for Arya to go absolutely buck wild on these dudes.
Interesting.
Like, I love that character. That was the one thing I've been annoyed by is how long they've moved her off the board, basically. Because even remember when she was walking around with the Hound? That was great stuff, man. Yeah. She's great. Maisie Williams, whatever her name is, she's fantastic. The character's awesome, and I like a good revenge story. So as far as I'm concerned, battles are great and everything, but I would prefer to just watch Arya sneak around slitting.
You'd like the Arya Assassin spinoff story?
Totally.
I think it's
Assassin's
possible.
Creed Arya Stark is what I'm after.
Whose side does Baelish end up on?
That is such a good question. And I think maybe what we've learned, and I think it is dangerous to say what you've learned about a character who seems totally unattached to any sort of code. But I think what we've learned is if there's one overwhelming thing besides self-interest, it's his love for the
Stark ladies.
Stark ladies, yeah. And so, you know, that's going to be interesting, sort of. And I think ultimately that's going to be what defines the Littlefinger character is – when the chips are down at the end of the day, all your cliches, is he about Peter Baelish or does his love for Sansa and really Catelyn Stark make him behave differently?
I think he's all about getting them checks.
If he is all about getting them checks,
he's all about Peter Baelish.
If he's all about Peter Baelish, I don't think he really ends up on a side.
Right? I mean, his power is his love, right? Is his ultimate love. And even I think his love of the Stark ladies is somewhat of an extension of their being an avenue to power for him.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
By the way, that monologue about how I, you know, all I think about is this picture and every day I ask myself, does this get me closer to this picture?
Well, and then
excellent summation
face.
Of him as a character, you know what I mean?
Oh, it totally is.
Yeah.
And you can tell he's sincere when he says that.
You
really
believe every word of it, yeah.
Thinking about, is this getting me closer to being the ruler of all this garbage? And when he gives that speech to Sansa, and then the next Winterfell scene, everyone's celebrating Jon Snow. And then it sort of cuts to Littlefinger, and he has this look on his face where, I mean, that's the question I think we're intended to ask is, if Sansa is loyal to Jon, is Littlefinger more loyal to Sansa or to his own image of being on the throne and figure out the Sansa part later? And, you know, I tend to think it's the latter.
Me too. That dude is thirsty.
Yes, I think that is true.
A big part of why she pushed him away right in that very moment.
Yeah.
Because she
can't trust
she's
him.
She's thirsty. by the way, I just want to mention this at some point. I definitely have a new favorite minor character on the show. And that's Lady Marmo. I can't get enough of
amazing.
Every scene she's in is tremendous.
That speech, and still you didn't answer the call.
Yeah.
Like, I love it.
Give me one of her speeches in every episode from now on.
Yes. Apparently my favorite characters on this show are women under 5'3".
Yeah.
Because Arya and Lady Mormont, I'm all in on both of them. Absolutely. Because isn't there something in a world dominated by filth and giant men? There's something beautiful about these little women wielding so much power. I love it.
Well, I mean, you could certainly – I mean, they're – for a show that's taken a lot of grief about its treatment of women, that's the one thing you see is that there's essentially a feminist undercurrent in this episode when you look now at the pieces, right?
And so you've the whole got show. Honestly, I think that was bunk.
Yeah. Well, you've got
I hate to put it in these stark terms because rape is a vicious and horrible crime. But is Sansa getting raped more horrible than Theon being tortured to the edge of death and having his dick cut off? Like, bad things happen to people on this show.
Well, yes, bad things happen to people. A lot of bad things happen to women very casually.
Yeah.
There are no man whores in the show.
That's not true. There absolutely are man whores in the show. One of them is the guy who sets up the Viper.
Oh, you're right. There are a couple man whores in the show.
There's
even reference to man whores. It's not nuts and dragons, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but okay, there's a little bit of male audience serving with nudity. But isn't that just because the lady audience is not really served by the dick shots we get? Like, again, in my view, and look, there are plenty of places where I understand why people with a feminist viewpoint, which I think I am one, but I understand why there are people who are like, this is anti-feminist. But I think they're wrong. I think they've missed the point. Again, awful things happen to people. But if you look at the course of this show in general, a lot of it has been about how even though women aren't allowed to do anything in this, you know, feudal world, they're actually the smart ones.
Right. Well, and look,
all the women who actually wield control.
If you like, right now, well, now they're all ruling, right? You've got Cersei as queen. You've got Daenerys as queen, and you know, one of her principal allies is a woman. Yeah. You know, you could really say if you consider Sansa, you know, to sort of be an equal of Jon Snow, you know, in that set, that's also being led by a woman. Plus, you've got all these strong female characters like Arya running around.
They certainly Jon Snow got his ass saved by a
Brienne.
Woman.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
I mean, in general, women wield a ton of power on this show, given the sort of feudal setting.
You know, and if you look at rape itself, as the idea of rape is that it, you know, it's a crime of power, as much as it is, you know, sex. This is certainly a show that's all about people of all genders, you know, being degraded.
Yeah,
in the name of power, being forced to submit, you know, it's really the primary undercurrent that runs through the show. So in that sense, it does make some sense.
I think a bigger complaint, frankly, if I was going to complain about isms, would be the fact that there's very, very few people of color on a show where race shouldn't matter at all.
Right.
Like that to me, if I was going to nitpick from a social justice perspective, it would be that and not feminism.
Are we on a planet or a world where black people don't exist? Are there any black people?
No, there's Salazan. You've Grey got Worm is certainly
right. Grey Worm,
blackish.
Miss Andre.
Yeah, so that's the point. There's like three black people, but there's no reason there couldn't be 30.
And they're all from like a certain part of the world, basically. Yeah,
and I guess again, you could say that that's like they've designed race in a certain way, but I don't see why anyone couldn't have been black.
Yeah, I don't know.
But again, that's not something I think about or worry about a lot. But
I literally hadn't thought
of
it until now, actually.
To me, that's a bigger issue than sexism.
So is there anything else that you want to see? Like, well, you know what? There's a lot we want to see. Maybe we should just pivot because we could do this for an hour, really, if we're talking about the future.
We could do a whole Game of Thrones podcast.
Game of Thrones. So we had one thing end. I can't even do the transition. Let's just talk about Messi.
But you're a professional.
Lionel Messi. How much of the Copa America did you wind up watching?
The tournament, very little.
Okay.
The last few games, most of all of them.
Okay, great. So you saw at least a good chunk of the knockout round. It sounds like.
Yeah, of the semis and the finals.
Yeah. So for those of you who didn't see, Argentina and Chile, as predicted by me on this podcast last week, battled in the final. Chile, it was basically a repeat of last year's Copa America.
Yep. Almost to a T.
Yeah. 0-0, went to penalty kicks. Chile wins on penalty kicks. Messi went first for Argentina and missed badly in PKs. And then after the match – announced his intention to retire from international soccer, which I guess has gotten a lot of people talking. I personally do not buy this at all. I think he's serious, but I don't. I'll believe it when I see it. Is kind of my attitude towards this.
Richard Jefferson retired the day the Cavs won the finals, and a few days later said, "Nah, I'll probably play one more year." And now is saying he has two or three more years left. So we should start by saying sudden athlete retirements after heartbreaking losses are often not totally completely serious. And again, not because they don't mean it when they say it, but because cooler heads ultimately prevail. Yeah. And he's 29 friggin' years old, and he's the best player in the world. Certainly the Argentinian National Soccer Federation, whoever they are, will be lobbying hard to get him back out there because it'd be ridiculous not to. If we want to talk about the game a little bit first.
Yeah, let's talk about the game. Because the game, the game was great.
It was competitive.
Great is a strong word because it wasn't like a classic soccer game. But yes,
no.
The competition was great. There was some question going into this tournament because it's kind of a sort of one-off tournament. You know, usually it's every 4 years and they, coming back for this one. And some people call it a cash grab, whatever. There was some question about the motivation of the teams coming into this tournament. And when you watch that final, those were two teams that really, really wanted to win that final and wanted to kill each other.
I don't think Argentina played very well.
They did not play very well. No, I would agree with that. But I think they played with a lot of desire in the first half.
Sure.
Was just really, really contentious. A lot of fights. Two red cards, one for each side, which you thought was going to mean a really wide open second half, 10-on-10, Messi with all that space, and a game that would favor Argentina. And then that game just didn't really develop
because
both teams sort of played cautiously, which is a little bit weird.
It's confusing because and I understand why they're playing less cautiously against a U.S. team that can't compete with them, but they were consistently aggressive, consistently pushing forward, consistently attacking against the U.S., and I just didn't see that.
Yeah, well, I think Chile.
Obviously, Chile has a part in that, but
Chile makes that difficult. They're going to have more of the ball, and they're just not fun to play. And that's the one thing that's really it didn't develop here. But the one thing that seized hold of me is that I now have a giant man crush on the Chilean national team. I cannot watch those guys enough. I love them. They have a guy who's already my favorite player, Alexis Sanchez, who's a really fun player to watch and just will just keep attacking you if you let him. Works really hard. You know, he's the kind of guy that will make four moves on a guy, lose the ball, hustle after the guy to get the ball back, and then try to make four moves on another guy. And I'll watch
relentless is the word that jumps to mind.
All day. And, in the Mexico match, Chile won 7-0. Basically just kept running at them for 75 straight minutes long after Mexico had stopped even trying to deal with them. And just tremendous. So you got Alexei and then literally 10 other tatted up, just thugging guys running around with skill and playing with flair, but also who want to cut you down and hurt you. And I said this on Twitter. My hope is that if we ever get to the level, the United States, if we ever get to the level of an elite world-class team, I hope that our style of play resembles this Chilean national team because, to me, it's really fun to watch on both ends. And they play with this just fight and desire and grit that seems to me to be quintessentially American. I can't get enough of them.
You know what I would call it more so than quintessentially American? Is quintessentially hockey-esque, if that makes sense.
I could see that.
There's a lot of similarities between the two sports in terms of the way the game is played. And the main difference usually is the physicality that comes with just every play in hockey. I mean, obviously fighting is different and stuff like that. But just in terms of part of almost every hockey player's goal is to use their body to get people off the puck. And sometimes in soccer, that's less the case. There's more positional defense. There's more sagging back and for specific attacks to get the ball back. And the Chilean team is constantly trying to physically impose their will. And it is exciting to watch.
Yeah. So back to Messi. And,
yeah.
You know, because I look at this.
First of all, can we just say, for people who don't get it totally, missing a PK for Lionel Messi, who had never missed one in international competition before, is essentially Steph Curry missing a free throw in the last 2 minutes of a big basketball game.
Yeah, it's a tie game, really. Because, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, a
yeah,
missing
yeah,
a PK yeah. generally has a fairly large determining factor on the outcome of a game.
Exactly. Yeah. And Messi going over the bar is Steph Curry airballing a free throw.
Yeah. It's
in the final minutes of a tied game. It's unthinkable.
Yeah, it was just shocking. It's one of those things where it was so off that you almost have to chalk it up to nerves, you know?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying is, like, if Steph Curry rolls one out, it's like, man, tough break. If he airballs it, what other choice do you have? But, man, this got to him.
Yeah. Well, and it's the one thing running through to me, both this and the Euros, you know, when you watch these matches, you can tell how much the international game and representing their country means to these players. And that's, you know, and you could see in that moment that it meant something for Messi. Argentina, right, is a side that consistently produced some of the 5-10 best teams in the world at any given moment, yep. Usually probably closer to 5, and yet hasn't won a trophy of any kind for 20 years. So, you know, winning something for Argentina, I think, is a big deal for me, and that's for them, rather. And I think that is why I just can't see Messi skipping out on a World Cup in 2 years. I just can't see it.
Because he's going to
because the whole country, including him, yeah, I think is gonna yeah. they lust after deal. That cup and yeah. You know, you're talking about a team that has a legitimate chance to win. Even if he somehow doesn't play, they'll have a decent chance to win.
Well, unless you know, because now they're saying, well, these other guys are thinking about following him into retirement. You know, unless that happens,
yeah.
Again. A bunch of dudes being like, well, if Messi's quitting, maybe I am too, right after the game. It probably right. does not tell you a whole heck of a lot.
And look, there was some stuff. I guess Messi's been bitching about the Argentine Football Federation and I think maybe some of their treatment and stuff on the
right.
on the so trip. So there could be some of that happening too.
I expect we have the same expectation, which is that the Argentine Football Federation will do whatever the F it has to do to get him back out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And they'll be ready to go. And it'll be fascinating. Whether or not they can win in 2018 in Russia, I think will be one of the more fascinating subplots.
Well, how about this? How delightful and fascinating and wonderful would a rematch be? I mean, they clearly – that's a bugaboo for Argentina now is this Chilean team because certainly by you know individual measure and talent as we understand it, Argentina is a is it fair to say significantly better team?
Well, yeah. Historically, it's no like when you, and particularly if you look at the records between the two teams, and it's weird because now Chile's won the last two cup finals against Argentina, but since they're 0-0 draws, technically they don't count as victories over right. Argentina. So when you look at like their career record, like I think Argentina's won like 12 out of the last 16 or something like that against Chile. So it's
yeah, and I mean even
it's
just
they've been fairly dominant.
Know, judging the roster as we do by how successful the guys are in, you know, regular league soccer in the various countries they play in, Argentina looks like the significantly more yeah. talented squad.
And I should say they did beat them in the group stage of this Copa. And,
yeah, 2-1, I think.
Yeah, and in World Cup qualifying as well. So I don't know if right. they're, like, so, totally in their head. But, man, on their day, you know, they definitely have some fear, I would say, at least, of the Chilean national team. In this
well,
place.
Yeah, and I would say they're almost is a sign they're more in their head because yeah. when the stakes are not as high, Argentina exerts their superior talent, and then the stakes are big, and Chile musters this effort that somehow takes the Argentinian team out of their game.
Yeah. God, I love that Chilean team. I'm going to be rooting yeah. so hard for them in the World Cup. And I have zero connection to Chile
hey.
Whatsoever. I just like watching them play.
What about America?
Well, of course. I'm, it's all about, look, I am always America first when it comes
what
to soccer.
What you mean is when the U.S. is eliminated.
Correct. That's correct. That's what you have to do as a U.S. fan. I'm ride or die with the U.S. until we're out, and then I got to find some reasons to watch the tournament. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's how it rolls. True story. And I think, by the way, speaking of the U.S., we can say at least they acquitted themselves much more competently against Colombia the second time around than they did against Argentina in the previous match.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't know.
You know, small victories.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what this tournament was, like small victories. Like, yes, we got to the place in the tournament that Jurgen had set as a goal.
The goal, right.
You know, we beat the teams we probably should beat. We looked pretty fairly poor against the teams, I think, you know, with the exception of maybe the last Colombia game. And again, you don't fully know the motivation of sides in a third place game, so you try not to draw too much from any of that. We just have a really long way to go, and
we do.
And I don't know if we're going to be able to bridge that gap in any significant way between now and 2018. We found a couple pieces, some things that we can use going forward in this tournament. The play of Bobby Wood was really encouraging. Yeah. The center back pairing of Brooks and Cameron was encouraging.
I'm not sure Jurgen did, but I learned that Pulisic should be out there for at least 50 minutes every game.
Yeah, hopefully Nagby will get some more time, and I think we're going to need to see a changing of the guard in the midfield sort by the time Russia rolls around. So it'll be interesting to see where we're at.
You can't go into the World Cup with Michael Bradley as the center of everything you do with the ball. You just can't.
Yeah, he went. And they're still a team. I think that's part of one of the problems. Like, if Bradley does not play well, they have a tough time winning. Yeah. And you're going to get fewer games where Bradley plays well, just as he's getting older. It's just what it is. You know, and he's not a 90-minute guy as a lock anymore, which I thought was an interesting thing for him in this tournament. All right, so that's a lot. We did a lot of hardcore soccer talk, Brett. Let me just say, if you're a casual soccer fan, I can't recommend watching these Euros enough. It's been look, not every match has been great. There have been some clunkers, but man, there's been some serious drama.
I did watch Iceland beat England, and that was awesome. And also, God, if you are a diehard British football fan, I'm sorry.
Yeah, man.
Because that squad is a lackluster bunch of schlubs.
Well, they're not without talent.
Oh, my God. They got worked by Iceland.
They have just enough talent to frustrate you, right? You're like, why isn't this team better?
Oh, yeah. The talent is there. But those dudes are worthless. Yeah. They got out-hustled by Iceland. They just got outplayed for 90 minutes by Iceland.
Yeah, but I tell you, man, the looks on those English players' faces when that match ended, just the what just happened, what have we done?
I'll tell you what just happened.
How am I going to go home?
I'll tell you what happened. You went down a goal to a tiny little country whose manager is a part-time dentist, and then you folded over like a cheap suit. It was pathetic to watch.
Yeah. I think one day England will find the right manager to get the right amount out of that talent, and there'll be a day when they put it all together. Like they actually have some young, exciting pieces there, they may just need to go through it a little bit to get to the point where they're competing on the level of some of the elite European teams.
Being said, Iceland is like George Mason right now. Like, get excited about Iceland. What they're doing is pretty cool.
Yeah, Iceland honestly reminds me a lot of my Cornell Big Red year that they made that run to the Sweet 16. Like, you know, like there's some legitimate things there that you can get excited about, and it's a great story, but sooner or later they're going to meet their Kentucky, and it's not going to be pretty.
Sure. Yeah, no, of course that is going to happen. Well, that's why I said George Mason.
Mason actually made it to the Final Four.
They're one win away.
I think Iceland's done winning games in this tournament.
That's probably what they're one win from the Final Four.
Yeah, but they're playing France at home next, right?
Yeah, that's not a great matchup.
No, I know. It's not. And, Italy, Germany, and the winner of that against most likely France, that's going to be great to watch. I mean, look, Iceland, France, will be a fun story to keep track of. You've got the potential emergence of, Belgium, on the other side of the bracket, I think could be interesting.
They're a very, very highly rated national team at this point. I think they're number two in the FIFA rankings.
Yeah, they just haven't really done it on the world stage.
Right. Yet. So that's a ranking based on the talent on the roster, and you're starting to see it, which is pretty cool. But
And Portugal's over there on that side of the bracket, right?
I believe you're correct about
that. Yeah, so it could be, this could be Ronaldo finally takes Portugal to prominence. So.
Yeah, it's a battle of these small Western European countries.
Like I was when I realized yesterday that there were no Euros, I was
a couple of days off is
bummed.
Kind of depressing after so much soccer every day for so long.
Yeah, it's been a great summer and I've been really stoked about it.
I am curious to see whether, because I feel like this is the first time I can remember the Euros, just as someone in the sports media in America and on a sports radio station, where, look, we talk mostly about what we think is and what we judge is from response, the popular topics of the day and the American sports fan. And this is the first time I can remember the Euros even really poking into that. I mean, look, most days I still go and talk Giants and Warriors.
Are you getting calls on it, though? People actually want to talk soccer?
Occasionally, yeah. More so than I can ever remember for a non-World Cup event. And that makes sense because Premier League is available for American consumers easily for the first time over the last couple years because, it seems like all of these big tournaments are now being carried by one of the sports television networks, either Fox Sports 1 or ESPN or what have you. So the playing of these games is much more available and much more in the national consciousness of the American sports fan. And I'm interested to see whether this pair of tournaments happening at this time has a real effect on the general American sports fans' view of and interest in soccer.
I think it's going to have an effect. I don't know about real effect because I think it's just it's a gradual chipping away. Like the Premier League audience is growing 50% every season. And it's,
but don't you think it's sort of ripe for an inflection point somewhere?
I do. I suspect if that happens, though, to be a World Cup, if you're talking about really hitting a casual American fan, it's hard for me to imagine these sort of off-cycle tournaments being the thing that does it, but I think it's part of the build. It's all a step forward. Things like the Bundesliga being available on Big Fox at times.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like that just expands the footprint of the sport as people get exposed to it. If you do watch it and you start to understand it, I firmly believe you'll like it. It's fantastic athletic competition, and there's a reason the rest of the world loves it. It's not just because they can't see American football. Like, that's not it. They like this game.
That's definitely not it.
Yeah, so...
By the way, one thing we are going to have to do as it hopefully gets more popular and more attention is get some better announcers.
You're talking about the American announcers in comparison to the English announcers?
Yeah.
I would agree with that. But I just think it's because that we're not capable. It's really hard for us as a culture to produce
Lawless.
Something like the British announcers.
Alexi Lawless, first of all, as just an analyst, picked the U.S. to beat Argentina. Stop it. Stop it, dude.
And Colombia, I believe.
Just stop it right now. And Landon Donovan is trash. Landon Donovan won't say anything. He won't talk about – if you watched and heard any of Ian Dark and Steve McManaman talking about the British team as they were getting their butts whooped by Iceland, they crushed them.
Yeah.
They were embarrassed, and the U.S. gave no better of an effort. Granted, they may not have had the ability to beat Argentina, but their effort was no better. And Landon Donovan spent 90 minutes apologizing for them.
Yeah.
And excusing them. And it was excruciating to listen to.
there is a lot of that. And I think we'll get over some of that as a country. But I just don't, The British announcers are so good.
God, they're good
at turning a phrase, and they just they understand the rhythm of the game and when to be there and when not to be there and when to let the moment happen. And I just don't, it's going to take Americans a while to catch up to that. There are a couple of good American play-by-play announcers and guys are trying, and I think now as the sport becomes wider acceptance, you see more guys trying, and yeah. it's just like developing great American players. It's going to take some time for that to happen.
Yeah, you're probably right.
All right, I know we got to go soon, so I did want to bring this up because we've been, I've been on the record on this podcast as being fully out on Drake. I just don't, I'm not.
And I'm only a little more in than you are, so you know. You don't have to apologize for that.
I'm tired of this man being forced down my throat. I think his music is mediocre.
Say that again?
I said I'm tired of this man being forced down my throat. I think the music is mediocre. He's one of, you know, there we are.
Look, nobody likes a man forced down their throat.
Exactly. Thank you. I was really trying to move away from your double entendre, damn it.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
We're back in the Game of Thrones discussion.
No, I agree with you almost entirely on Drake. I don't know if this is also your perspective. I do think he's a guy with incredible talent. I think he mostly hasn't used it to great effect.
Yeah, I just don't. For as much as I've heard about the guy, I really don't think he's built up a giant wall of super memorable songs. And by the way, I should say as popular as he is,
I think he's an excellent singer. Yeah. I think he's an excellent rapper. And I think he's an excellent pop star, and I think he's done very little to prove that.
Because he is super-duper popular. Like, I'm not trying to say people don't like Drake. They do. I'm just not one of those
lazy,
people.
I think he's lazy, though. He strikes me as a lazy worker.
Mm-hmm.
Like, work harder. Make better music. That's my position on Drake. I believe he's capable.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
We may not is the problem. But anyway.
It's true. We may not. Well, we'll know definitively. At some point, I guess. Yeah. So I got a new girlfriend, and the other day, the girlfriend's like, "My birthday's coming up," and I'm thinking, "All right, well, this can present an interesting challenge."
And how new?
I'd say it's a little less than 2 months, I guess now.
Okay,
you know, we've been dating.
Because that matters in this discussion. But go on.
She's like, "For my birthday," I'm like, "Oh, sweet, you're gonna make it easy for me."
Yeah.
"I'd like you to get me tickets to Drake and Future." I was like, "Oh, you're making it really hard for me."
Where are you at on Future?
I'm fine on Future.
Okay.
Yeah, the Future part of this equation, I don't mind. I'll go check that out. I'm going to get the tickets. I mean, of course, I'm going to do that. Like,
no, I mean, your girlfriend tells you what she wants for her birthday. I'm going to give her what she wants. Yeah.
Here is my question.
Uh-oh. Do I have to go?
Well, I don't know. I think I have to go, right?
Yeah, okay.
I think I have to go. I guess, but do I bring up the fact that, like, just so you know, I don't like Drake? Or do I just shut up and go and, you know, try to have a good time? I'm going to really try hard, I think, to see the good here or try to figure out what I'm missing. Exactly. I don't want to kill her bad time, but I also don't want to be like fake. So what I mean? Like I don't totally know what to do. I'm assuming, since I've been on record on this podcast at length about how I think Drake is terrible, that she doesn't listen to this podcast. So I feel like it's a safe space for us to talk about this.
First of all, we need all the listeners we can get. So shame on you.
Shame.
How awesome was that? Cersei saying shame as she shut the door on that vicious nun. Oh, I'm still pretty jazzed up about Game of Thrones. Okay.
You gotta love a woman taking the moral high ground after she just explained why she likes to do her brother.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
I think you gotta be honest, but maybe not totally direct. Does that make sense?
Hmm. So you think I should just come clean? Just so you know.
I think you should come like not too dirty.
Okay.
That sounded super weird.
What does that even look like?
I think it's something like, you know, happy birthday. I can't wait to go with you. I'm not the biggest Drake fan in the world. You know, like I don't think you want to back up your claims that he sucks. You know what I mean? I don't think you want to be like, listen, we're going to go and everything, but this dude's bad, and here's why. You know? But yeah. I don't think you also don't want to go there and then, like, have to sort of pretend to enjoy it at a level you don't.
Right. Well,
that just sounds like torture.
That's the whole thing, and I'm just worried about it in general. It's like, I don't want my not enjoying Drake to affect her good time for her birthday. You know what I mean?
Well, then maybe honesty is a way to sneak out of having to go.
Well, and I had definitely thought about, like, hey, I'm happy to get you these tickets, and
I want you to have a great
time. And maybe you should take someone who would enhance your great time. But, like, hey. That doesn't feel right either.
Yeah, she may not. You know, there's so many variables here, some of which I can't really help you with because I don't know your girlfriend.
Right.
So it depends what kind of person she is a little bit. But that's definitely one approach, is to be like, yo, baby, this should be fun for you and your friend Jenny. You know what I mean? Jenny loves Drake too. Like, you guys should just go have a girls' night out, and then I'll take you to a nice dinner.
I'll take you to a nice dinner. I'll meet you afterwards for drinks. And
yeah.
I mean, I've thought about that. I just don't. I don't know. All right, give out the email address.
Toydepartmentpod@gmail.com.
Good. I actually remembered it right.
Toydepartmentpod.
You know, if you have thoughts about what I should do, because I legitimately don't know.
When? How far out are we? Do we have time for the people to advise you?
It's like 3-4 weeks away.
Okay, so email toydepartmentpod@gmail.com. How does Derek handle his girlfriend in this case? Does he go along with her to the Drake show? Does he send her with a friend? Does he lie about his feelings for Drake? The problem with lying general.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to think it's not
eventually come home to roost.
I think I don't like to think of it as lying. It's just so much as, you know, withholding.
Okay. that makes it less inappropriate, I suppose.
I just and here's the thing about withholding. Like, that doesn't seem like a great option.
No.
But I just feel like
that's
once
coming out eventually, man.
And
like,
once
you can't live a life with someone and not eventually tell them you're not a Drake fan.
Once, yeah, exactly. But you know me. Once I start talking about how I don't like Drake, it's gonna avalanche into.
Well,
I
see. Well, that's why I said you shouldn't defend your dislike of Drake.
Yeah,
that's what I can hear you getting ready to do.
I don't want to do that. I know that's not the right thing to do either. I'm so torn.
I'm totally picturing you right now in the middle of the second song of Drake's set, leaning over and be like, "See, this is what I'm talking about."
Yeah, I guess fourth option would you just like accidentally like leave this podcast on somewhere.
I think that's the worst possible option. Like, you definitely don't want to sit her down and have a tough talk about how bad Drake is, but you also don't want her to have a tough talk with me while I'm just extemporaneously shouting about how Drake's not very good.
All right, that's fair enough. all right, so let's get the hell out of here. I've got something I want to assign for homework. I don't know. Do you got anything?
Nothing new for me. No, I will just throw it out there again, since you're uninterested and don't want to talk about it, that I really think Preacher is excellent.
You know, I've been thinking. I guess I'll go back and give that one another episode. I still have the second episode on my DVR. Maybe it'll turn around for me.
Okay,
just because not very excited about it.
There is like some fundamentally some sort of mystical stuff going on.
It's not even so much. Yes, I mean, we talked about it. I'm not interested in spending time in this world, but I wasn't super impressed with the construction of the show.
Oh, I think that is actually pretty good ultimately.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hearing good things.
The first episode is a lot of prologue, but I think I really like the characters, and I think the acting's really good. I dig it.
All right. And I will yeah, I mean, I'll grant you that sometimes a pilot is just trying to do too many things, and it's not always the best way to judge a show. So
yeah, and especially in a show with so many moving parts and characters as this one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm legitimately sad about the gap in my Sunday schedule right now, right? So
yeah,
you know,
well, do you watch Ray Donovan?
It's such a come down from Game of Thrones to Ballers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
oh, did Ballers premiere?
Ballers did not premiere, but I think Ballers is coming on soon.
Okay. Oh, because the Ray Donovan premiered this season.
Yeah, it did. It's not my bag.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's sort of a alt Sopranos in a way. It's not it's nothing I would say is a must watch, but I do. It is fun.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to throw out for homework the other Showtime show on Sunday nights, Roadies, which is the
Cameron
new Cameron Crowe
right.
vehicle. And I'm not, you know, a lot of times we give out homework because I'm like, this is amazing and you need to see it. I'm not going to sit here and take that stand on Roadies because at least the pilot episode, and you can watch the second episode online now if you want to get two in. It's flawed, but it still Cameron Crowe has an ability to sort of hit all my sweet spots. You know, he's just
Vinyl.
He's just I definitely liked it better than Vinyl, I would say. Okay. It's certainly, you know, we talked about how Vinyl for a show made, you know, ostensibly about music and by music lovers felt like it sort of it missed on
yeah.
music.
Yeah.
Roadies is much better to me, you know, in that way. And not that it isn't hammy at some times. And also in the way that the Oscars is constantly like trying to show you really hard what's great about movies. I think Roadies can be doing that about music sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
There's an actual song of the day in the show. And apparently there's a little bit of a conceit where, you know, they're on tour and, you know, they're going to have guest stars drop by as the openers in each episode. You know what I mean? So
right.
you're going to have bands playing themselves. The Head and the Heart is the one in the pilot. But that kind of gets right to it. Like, I really like The Head and the Heart. So it's
yeah.
I'm like, oh, here's The Head and the Heart playing themselves and doing their new song that I like. You know, there's just a lot of that. Oh, here's this little thing that I like. And a lot of winning actors doing some. So anyway, I would say check it out. I'd love to just hear what you think. I'm not telling you it's the best show on television or that it will change the way you feel about Cameron Crowe, which is something that he might be looking for at this stage of the game.
I have complicated feelings about Cameron Crowe,
yeah.
but you know, his failings to me don't wipe away his successes.
Yeah, a lot of that's on display there. There's, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly in this show. So I'm curious as to what you think about it. It sort of reminded me of his almost, and maybe I'm now convincing you not to watch it. It's like his Studio 60 would be sort of the analogy to me, where it's like,
that show
you know, for
bad.
Sorkin. Yeah, and I think that's a show that's acquitted itself a little bit better in retrospect.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, check it out. I'd love to know what you think about it. And I would also say, as you would expect in any Cameron Crowe vehicle, the music supervision.
Yeah.
The song choices are really – a lot of them are really great. I got some really
I like
good
that.
Ones
I'm
that
into
pilot,
good music.
So, yeah, enjoy that.
All right. Will do.
And I think with that, we can wrap this bad boy up.
Sounds good to me.
All right. Thank you for listening. Or if you're my girlfriend, thank you for not listening. And we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.